Athens poet and who's also the author of 3 books of poetry and the editor of the literary magazine Fence, but she's also been a driving force behind this Saturday's the Council of Literary Magazines and Press's 6th annual Hudson Valley Literary Festival called All Lit Up in conjunction with the Hudson Opera House and Hudson Wine Merchants. Welcome to the afternoon show, Rebecca. How and why did this festival start?
Well, it's funny. I'm not actually a driving force behind it in the sense that I had nothing to do with coordinating this actual episode of it. But really, I was involved at the beginning of the sort of the whole concept of the Lit Mag Fair, which started in, I think it was 99 in New York City at Housing Works Used Book Cafe, which is a nonprofit bookstore that supports homeless people with AIDS living in New York City. So a long time ago, I was on the advisory board of that and also had started my own literary journal and press at the time. And so I, along with another publisher named Janine Gordon Bachman, who had a magazine called Literal Latte, this is all ancient history, we thought, well, literary journals are so fantastic, why don't more people read them? And then we thought, well, why don't we do a big event where we get a ton of publishers to agree to sell their journals really, really cheaply, and it'll just be an opportunity for a lot of people who don't feel that they can afford them or don't have access to them to come and just scoop up armfuls of literary journals. So we sell them for $2 each. So anyway, we had this pretty gigantically successful first one
was 6 years ago, right?
No, This was quite a long time ago. This was in maybe 99 or something like that, 99, 2000. So after, I'm giving you the whole genesis. This is like way back, going all the way back. So we did that, and then CLMP, which is the organization that is coordinating this one here at the Hudson Opera House, they became part of, they sort of saw that it was successful and decided that it was something that they could replicate around the nation. So it's actually nationwide. There are Lit Mag fairs all around the country, and publishers donate their books, their journals and books, and sell them usually to benefit some nonprofit or something else. So this one, I think, has happened 6 times.
And you had a hiatus last year, right? Why was that?
Well, see, I don't know because I wasn't involved in coordinating it. But I don't know. I thought it happened last year. Or actually, you know what? It was in Albany last year. That's what. Yeah, that's what happened.
Right. And so the aim, principally, is just to put literary magazines in the hands of those who might not be able to afford them normally, because they are pretty expensive, right?
Well, relatively speaking, I often think about, like a subscription to, say, Fence, for example, which would be 2 issues a year's worth is 2 issues, is $17. So it's really actually not that expensive, but people just perceive it for some reason as, because it's a periodical, it's ephemeral, and it's not necessarily something that somebody might feel that they would own forever. I think it seems like expensive, but if you compare it to, say, the price of a movie ticket, it's not a lot. But yes, the purpose of the Lit Mag Fair is absolutely to just make people feel like they can explore, a big variety of different journals and see what different presses are up to.
And you have here hundreds of books and magazines will be available. And you'll also have some literary publishers there?
Yep. Apparently there's at least 20 actual publishers who are coming to, man and woman their own tables. And but 100 publishers approximately are represented, and at least 20 of the actual living creatures.
So presumably writers might also go and pitch a few stories as well.
Oh, yeah, we love that. We love that when writers come up to the table and ask us to publish their work.
Yeah, I'll be right there. I'll be at the head of the queue. And you have at 5 p.m. you've got a reading and reception at Hudson Wine Merchants, and you will be reading along with Jonathan Dixon and Monica Yoon.
Oh, is Monica Yoon reading? That's fantastic. Great.
And you have a forthcoming novel coming out called The Beginners.
I do.
And Jonathan is the author of Beaten, Seared and Sourced, a memoir of his recent education at the
Culinary
Institute of America.
Yeah.
So how does something like this help you as a poet and a literary editor? What does it do for the business to have a festival like this?
Well, a lot of things. I mean, it's always fun just to spend time with your fellow publishers. That's always kind of a nice thing, just to sort of, you know, see what other publishers are up to. Are you asking how does it help the, like, a person out there in the world who might wish to come?
Well, how does it help those who publish literary magazines?
How does it help us to have a sort of a fair like this? Well, really, it's just about trying to get more exposure for your publication. That's what it boils down to. That.
Yeah. And what is the state of literary magazines these days? How are they doing?
My. Well, it's kind of fascinating. You know, what with the economic downturn, you would think that literary journals would just completely crumble and fall away, given that they were already so incredibly marginalized and underappreciated. And yet, I think what it turns out to be is that they, because of the sort of depressed state they were already in, they are unaffected. They were already prepared to withstand, you know, a huge kind of lack of attention and lack of interest and such. So there's that. I think they're really, in general, holding steady. But then also there's been, I think, recently, I don't know how it relates to economics, but there's been kind of I think it sort of like solidifies the audience that already existed.
Has the depletion of small independent booksellers and the kind of takeover by large chains like Barnes and Noble and so on, has that reduced the demand for small presses?
It's reduced the exposure. It's reduced the visibility, just the literal shelf space. I mean, you really can't find, even at the existing independent bookstores, they really hardly ever have sections of journals. The Spotty Dog does now, which is awesome. Thank you, Jess. But I think that's the main thing, is that it's no longer as likely that somebody will just wander into a bookstore and just, you know.
So how do you manage to market them?
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, the internet has been really useful for that. I mean, there's a lot of online journals are quite good, and have to some extent replaced, I would say, the print journal. Yeah. I'm not sure exactly why I insist on continuing to publish a print journal, but I do.
I was just going to come on and ask that, to the extent to which online is taking over from print.
Yeah, no, it's just a funny thing. I mean, some people still prefer the object in their hands for reading, and there's all sorts of pressure to now transmogrify that object into a digital object, like a, you know, a handheld device. Like,
an iPad.
Like, why isn't Fence available for your iPad? I don't know. It's just because I'm not quite there yet. But it's a very strange moment for literary publishing in all sorts of ways. But that is a major one, is like the object itself is shifting out of primacy. But that's kind of what I was getting at earlier, is that I think there's, at the same time, it's not as voluminous, but there is a resurgence of interest in handmade, or not exactly handmade, but in sort of finely made objects. So a lot of publishers, I think a lot of the most successful small press publishers, are the ones who put the most care into their production values. I mean, and when I say small press publishers, I'm still talking about the print ones. So, you know, really concentrating on what the actual books are looking like and feeling like in your hands.
Poetry is something you sort of like to have in a book, right? And pick it up and put it down and open it up somewhere.
Yeah, no, I think that is a quality of poetry, maybe especially, is that it's meant to be like, it's meant to be, it's so ephemeral, or the effect of reading a poem is so ephemeral that having it as a physical object is like balances that out somehow. Yeah.
Do you think it's more difficult to get published as a poet than as a prose writer, short story writer, or?
I don't know exactly. There's many venues for poetry now, and there's actually sort of a whole other development is that there's no longer really a stigma attached to what used to be called vanity publishing or self-publishing. Now is just something people can just sort of publish themselves in a kind of, you know, endless way. That isn't, yeah, so.
Do a lot of people do that then, publish themselves these days?
I think a lot of people do, yeah. I mean, I guess that's not really what you're asking, though. You're asking, I guess I was offering that because I think it's a pretty interesting alternative to entering the rat race of trying to get a manuscript published and, you know, contests and all the things that people go through with poetry, especially. It's pretty hard.
Now, how do you get content? People just submit a lot of things to you?
Yeah, they do. Yes, indeed, they do. We're only open, actually, 2 months out of the year to submissions, and we get something like 3,000 submissions in a month, and then we shut down and we spend 6 months reading those, and then we open up again.
So, do people, given that it is, well, traditionally it's always been more difficult to get published if professional, well, in a magazine or an online magazine, if you were a poet than if you were a short story writer, that hasn't prevented people from just writing then. Poetry.
No, nothing seems to stop people from writing poetry. You cannot stop them.
That's encouraging. It's good to know. Still thriving.
No, I mean, it is really a curious thing about poetry as well, though, that there isn't an equal number of people reading it, you know, so the writers are not balanced out by readers necessarily, but.
Right, yeah, I think that's been a problem with the short story as well, something similar. Which magazines do you admire? Which literary magazines do you admire?
Well, my current favorite right now is one called A Public Space. It's just a really lovely magazine out of Brooklyn that was started by this nice woman, Bridget Hughes, who had been an editor at the Paris Review for a while, and then she kind of went off in a different direction. And A Public Space is nice because it's totally print, but it takes advantage of visual culture in a really cool way. They have a lot of beautiful reproductions of photographs, and it's just sort of very, the premise of it is that it's not exclusively literary in a way that feels exclusive. It's sort of open. It's not an art magazine necessarily, but it's just kind of very visually oriented. So I like that one a lot right now.
What about any online magazines that you admire?
Yeah. What are the online? I know there are some. I know there are. I actually try to spend as little time online as I possibly can. So I don't really, I have to confess, even though I respect and admire many, I don't read many online magazines. And the fun ones tend to be not exclusively literary again, The Rumpus is a really fun thing to read because, well, I mean, it's more of sort of commentary on literary culture than actual literature.
And what about the traditional literary magazines? How are they doing? Do you know how things like Paris Review are doing, or the Missouri Review, or any of those?
Well, Yeah, the ones that are funded by institutions are seeming to be having a pretty hard time. Mm. I mean, it grows harder and harder to justify their existence within the academy, mm-hmm. you know, because budgets are being cut and subscriptions are way down. And something, I don't even know if the Missouri Review is still being published, mm-hmm. but there are so many of those, that kind of journal, that nobody ever really read it, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, the Missouri Review is a great example. Like, I've never seen an issue of the Missouri Review. I know it exists, and I know, or it did, but it never, like you were asking about marketing, I think, or somebody, and that's always been a problem of the university journal like that is, you know, how do you get it out beyond its very small mm-hmm. intended audience? But so the Paris Review is doing great right now. They have a new editor. It's, he's kind of, you know, a very plugged in literary figure in New York City, and they've got a website that's very like highly active, and so yeah.
Are there poets who are getting a sort of wide reputation these days?
Oh gee. well, there's Kay Ryan. You've probably heard of her. I believe she's the poet laureate right now. She's been on the McNeil Lehrer show. She's on Garrison Keillor. I mean, if that's what you mean by a wide reputation, it's kind of hard. It's almost like to speak about a poet having a reputation, you have to immediately leap outside of poetry mm-hmm. and talk about radio and TV. And you know, there's, I don't think, I mean, poetry is famously very, what's that word that means? It's got lots of little worlds within it. So within all those different worlds, within each world of poetry, there's poets who are extremely respected and esteemed and widely read, but that doesn't mean that across the, you know, the great nation, anybody's going to know who they are.
I mean, in New York, poetry slams were, for a time, quite popular, were they not? The Nicaraguan poets and...
Nayorican.
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 Nayorican, yes.
Yeah.
Didn't they do a lot to popularize poetry?
Well, that particular kind of poetry, yeah. But again, it's like there's no poetry. You know, there is no poetry that is like, that applies to every idea of poetry. I mean, poetry is this funny, I don't know if it's just a cultural phenomenon with poetry. And, I mean, you if you were talking about, say, dance, you mm-hmm. wouldn't just say dance. You would say, you know, modern dance, ballet, you know, Zumba. No, whatever. What other kinds of dance? You know, Latin dancing. Like, poetry is sort of like that. You can't really just think of, there is no just...
And is rap, for example, is that poetry?
Well, certainly. I don't know. I mean, that's where you get into, I mean, that's more of popular a spoken, an oral form rap. So, mm-hmm. so yeah, I think
yeah,
so.
Yeah, there it's all sort of, it's one of the many trends of poetry in a way, rap poetry. Are there any other trends out there other than online and self-publishing?
Well, I guess, yeah, I'm probably being very confusing, but when I'm talking about the world of poetry, it has to do with like lineages, I would say, more than styles. So there are, you know, there are like schools of poetry that are coming down from, say, the Black Mountain poets, and you know, that group of poets in the 1950s and 60s. Who are sort of loosely connected to like the objectivists. So there's real ideological differences that separate, you know, different schools of poetry.
Do you think of yourself as being in one of those lineages?
Not so much, but I'm sure I am. I'm sure I am, and I just don't know which one it is, but or who. No, I mean, I specifically have identified myself as being somewhat of a non-category, or I just my disposition is such that I don't cleave to any particular group, and that's why my journal is called Fence.
You have any favorite poets?
Sure I do. You want me to name some of them? Well, John Ashbery. Mm-hmm. Our local poet is definitely, he's probably, you know, one of my all-time favorites. Oh, geez. I always blank out. I mean, this is ridiculous, but I just do. I blank out.
Do you like Billy Collins?
Not so much. He's not a favorite of mine. He's, I admire his skill at what he does. He's very good at what he does. It's not what I look for in poetry.
So what do you look for in poetry?
I tend to be more interested in, like, atmosphere. In sort of the, like, the expression of an inner or outer atmospheric kind of combination that has to do with language and has to do with emotion. And so, like, Billy Collins is so good at, you know, distilling something sharply in a way that you feel that you definitely understand it. Right. I'm not so interested in feeling that I definitely understand something.
Okay. And at the reception on Saturday, you're going to be reading. Are you reading from your poems or
I think I'm
going
to read
novel?
From the novel, actually. I need to practice doing that. So I think I'm going to take that opportunity.
Is it almost finished or where is
it? Oh, yeah.
What
it's all. It's actually coming out. It's June 30th. It's being printed as we speak.
Well, we'll have to have you back on the show.
Yeah.
Can you tell us what it's about?
Sure. It's about a teenage girl growing up in a small town in central Massachusetts. And she and her best friend encounter a mysterious couple who've moved to this town, and they all become very embroiled in a very sordid and disturbing psychosexual drama that's also supernatural.
Now, who would have thought it to look at you?
Yes, do tell, did you grow up in a central town in Massachusetts?
No, I did not.
Are you going to read us a poem now today?
I didn't bring one. I didn't think of it. I'm sorry. I wish I had some by memory, but I do not. And otherwise, I definitely would. I can do Jabberwocky if you want.
Sure.
Really?
Sure, absolutely.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, God, I've always wanted to do this on the radio. 'Twas brillig, and the slithy toves did gyre and gimble in the wabe. All mimsy were the burrow groves, and the mome wraths outgrabe. Beware the jabberwock, my son, the jaws that bite, the claws that catch. Beware the jubjub bird, and shun the frumious bandersnatch. He took his vorpal sword in hand, long time the manxome foe he sought. So rested he by the tum-tum tree, and stood a while in thought. And as in uffish thought he stood, the jabberwock with eyes aflame came whiffling through the tulgey wood, and burbled as it came. One, two, and through, the vorpal blade went snicker-snack. He left it dead, and with its head he went galumphing back. And hast thou slain the Jabberwock? Come to my arms, my beamish boy. O frabjous day, calloo calay, he chortled in his joy. 'Twas brillig, and the slithy toves did gyre and gimble in the wabe. All mimsy were the burrow groves, and the mome wraths outgrabe.
Thank you, Rebecca Wolfe. That was wonderful. That was Jabberwocky by Lewis Carroll, of course. One last question. Is there anything we haven't asked you about the event on Saturday or about poetry or...
Just about the event on Saturday, I would just say, please come. It's a great opportunity to meet a bunch of publishers, see a ton of really beautiful literary journals and books by small independent publishers and fantastic books that, you know, large publishers don't have the guts to publish. And they're all available super cheap. So it's going to be great.
Okay, so go to the literary festival, the Council of Literary Magazines for cheap literary magazines. And that's at the Hudson Opera House on Saturday, May 21st, from 11 to 4 p.m. with a 5 o'clock reception and reading at the Hudson Wine Merchants on Warren Street, featuring Rebecca Wolfe, Jonathan Dixon, and Monica Yun. And you've just been listening to Rebecca Wolfe on our show. Mm-hmm.
sugar.
Well, if it isn't Easy Reader.
Hey, hey. Easy Reader, that's my name. Reading, reading, that's my game. Lord. Top to bottom, left to right. That reading stuff is outside. Easy Reader, that's my name. I say,
How's it going, Easy Sugar?
Oui, c'est va, baby. Hey, listen, I need something cool to drink. Give me a bottle of that Dr. Delight.
You got it.
Dr. Delight. 8 fluid ounces. Contains natural and artificial flavoring. Caramel coloring. Maltose, dextrose, and 1/10 of 1% of benzoate of soda as a preservative. Heavy! Look here, I'm going to see you later, have
I? I don't want to break up your day, Sugar, but are you not going to drink that Dr. Delight?
No, honey, I don't want to drink that stuff. I just want to read it, you do?
Oh, get on out of here. Whew, that's easy.
Right on. I groove on all the words around. As long as they are written down. Oh yeah. Reading's heavy, reading's tough. I just don't seem to get enough. Oh. Easy Reader, that's my name. I'm a reading man, and it's words I see. Every word I see, I just gotta speak. I'm a first-class, genuine reading freak. Woo! Oh, Easy Reader, that's my name. Cooling it now. Yeah.
Hi, my name is Caitlin. You're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson. Hands-on listener-supported community radio.
This is Tom Rowe with the WGXC Morning Show, and we want to let you know about all the races and elections tomorrow, May 17th, in local school boards. There are different school board elections and school budget votes throughout Columbia and Greene counties, and we want to go through some information for anybody considering voting tomorrow. Chatham, the voting begins at 9 a.m. and continues through 9 p.m. at the elementary school in Chatham. And up on the WGXC newsroom site, there are stories from Paul Crossman in the Register Star and Amelia Teasdale in the Columbia paper reporting on the budget and the candidates running in those races. In Germantown, the voting is from noon to 9 p.m. And Jamie Larson in the Register Star has profiles of the four candidates running in Germantown and the $14 million budget there. In Hudson, voting is from noon to 9 p.m. at the J.L. Edwards School, at the Greenport No. 1 Pumper Company, at the Claverick Firehouse, at the Stockport Town Hall, and at Livingston Town Hall. And up on the WGXC website, there's links to Lynn Sloniker's Unmuffled blog that covers the Hudson school system, Audra Jornoff's piece in the Register Star about the three candidates running for the three seats in Hudson, and also a hour-long show at issue on WGXC that featured Sloniker, the superintendent of Hudson Schools, Jack Howell, school board member Peter Meyer, and others talking about the Hudson budget and school board race this year. In the Ichabod Crane School Board, the voting is from 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. at Ichabod Crane High School in the gym. There are John Mason has profiles of all the candidates, John Chandler, Londra Haber, Andrew Kermarch, Susan Ramos, and Cheryl Tresker. And there's also a story from Amelia Teasdale about the $34 million budget in at Ichabod Crane. In New Lebanon, voting is from noon to 9 p.m. at the W.B. Howard Elementary School, and Paul Crossman in the Register Star has a story profiling the candidates running there. Taconic Hills, the voting is from noon to 9 p.m. at the Taconic Hills Veterans Community Room. John Mason has profiles of all the candidates: Steve Argus, Arnold Anderson, Justin Kutsky, George Lagona Jr., and Christine Perry at the Register Star. In Greene County and Catskill, the voting is from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. in the Catskill High School gym. WGXC has a hour-long Meet the Candidates forum recording up in an MP3 form that you can listen to that was recorded April 26th. There's also stories from Errol Zangla in the Daily Freeman and Jim Plank in the Daily Mail about the candidates. Four candidates seeking three seats: Karen Haas, William Fisk, Michael Maloney, and Ward Osborne. And Kara Durham, the voting is from noon to 9 p.m. at the Durham Middle School cafeteria. There are four candidates for three seats: newcomer Beth Phillips and incumbent Susan Kosminski, Bill Alfield, and Pat Ublocker. And there are also two propositions in Kara. One would authorize a $2,000 increase in the appropriation for the Kara Public Library from $18,500 to $20,500. And the second would authorize the purchase of 9 new 66-passenger school buses at a cost of more than $925,000. More than three-quarters of the cost would be returned to the district in the form of state aid. If approved, the proposition will allow the district to replace buses with between 50,000 and 150,000 miles in the past 10 years. In Greenville, voting is from 1 p.m. to 9 p.m. at Scott M. Ellis Elementary School. You can read a summary of the district Greenville budget by Miguel Madera in the Daily Mail, and he writes about unchallenged candidates Paul Lampman and Roseanne Stapleton in Greenville. In Coxsackie, Athens, the voting is from 1 p.m. to 9 p.m. at either Edward J. Arthur Elementary School in Athens or Coxsackie Elementary School. And Melanie Lakosovic in the Daily Mail has several stories about the $25 million budget there and the six candidates that are vying for three open board seats in Coxsackie, Athens. In Windham, Ashland, Jewett, the voting is from 1 p.m. to 9 p.m. at the school cafeteria. Michael Ryan in the Daily Mail has a story about the budget hearing in Windham, Ashland, Jewett. Hunter Tennersville, the voting is from 1 to 9 p.m. at the Hunter Elementary School cafeteria. Errol Zangla in the Daily Freeman and Jim Plank in the Daily Mail write about Brian Byrne, the one candidate running there. And in Ravina Koyman Selkirk, there's eight candidates going for three seats, and Hillary Hawk has profiles of the candidates in the Ravina News Herald. And you can see links to all those stories at the WGXC newsroom at newsroom.wgxc.org. Please get out and vote tomorrow, May 17th, at all those times and places. You can see those specific times and places at the WGXC newsroom. We're going to play some more music, and in a few minutes, Terry Doyle will be up with the very incomplete calendar of Hudson Valley music events coming up this week in the area.
Hi, this is Bruce from Copic. You are listening to WGXC 90.7 FM in Accra, Catskill, Hudson. Listener-supported hands-on radio for Greene and Columbia counties.
The Greene County Federation of Sportsmen hold their second annual Youth Activity and Derby Day beginning at 8 a.m. Saturday, May 21st, at the historic Catskill Point in Catskill. A fishing derby is scheduled for ages 5 to 10 and 11 to 15, with registration beginning at 8 a.m. and fishing starting at 9 a.m. and ending at noon. To enter the fishing derby, children must be accompanied by a parent or guardian and bring a fishing pole. Bait will be provided. There will be prizes in each division for the smallest, biggest, and largest number of fish caught. There will also be exhibits from the Columbia Green Friends of the NRA, as well as exhibits on archery, fishing, and turkey hunting. Call Henry Coons, the secretary of the Greene County Federation of Sportsmen, at 518-943-0644 for more information.
WGXC founding underwriting support is provided by the Columbia Hudson Partnership, helping small companies start up and grow in Columbia County. Find out why small is the new smart at chpartnership.com.
The Mental Health Association of Columbia and Greene Counties welcomes the community to its open house at 713 Union Street in Hudson on Thursday, May 26th from 4:30 to 6 p.m. to celebrate Mental Health Month. The Mental Health Association assists people affected by mental illness and provides community education and advocacy. More information about the association and its open house on May 26 can be found at mhacg.org.
WGXC founding underwriting support is provided by Common Ground Dispute Resolution Incorporated. Open to all residents of Columbia and Greene counties, Common Ground offers mediation services for the resolution of personal, civil, and criminal disputes experienced as part of everyday living. More information at commongroundinc.org.
90.7 FM.
Acre, Hudson, Catskill.
The Greene County Federation of Sportsmen hold their second annual Youth Activity and Derby Day beginning at 8 a.m. Saturday, May 21st at the historic Catskill Point in Catskill. A fishing derby is scheduled for ages 5 to 10 and 11 to 15, with registration beginning at 8 a.m. and fishing starting at 9 a.m. and ending at noon.
Is there anybody in there? Just not if you can hear me. Is there anybody? Come on, come on now.